Good morning, everybody.
I see that the mic is in working order.
And hopefully this laptop fell asleep and will be woken up again.
So this is actually my first time in the UK proper outside of Heathrow. So it's great to be here. And we can actually, so we have 40 minutes and we're going to bang through a perhaps slightly longer talk relatively quickly. But it would be good to know, because we can actually take this in a few different directions, how many folks here have had a chance to play around with CoffeeScript before or taken a really thorough look at it? So a decent number, but probably maybe a quarter or a third. So for those who don't know, CoffeeScript is a little language that compiles into JavaScript. So by that, what I mean is that you write your code and you pass it through a compiler, and when you're done, you get JavaScript source code that you can execute in a browser or in Node.js or in Adobe Photoshop or any runtime that supports JavaScript. So this may sound kind of crazy, but there are actually a large number of compiled to JS languages out there, this just being a small sampling of them and completely illegible. But on the screen, there are things like different versions of Haskell, cross-compilers that take source languages like subsets of C and Python and compile them into JavaScript, things that help with control flow in Node.js, like Streamline.js, GWT from Google, which will take, you know, sort of a subset of Java and compile it in, and just a huge variety of languages that are targeting JavaScript. And why would this be? You know, the answer naturally being that JavaScript is the only language that runs in the web browser. So if you want to have code that will run, you know, both on the server and on the client and that you can really use universally, it makes sense to target JavaScript. And so most of these languages are taking sort of new language semantics and different ways of writing code and, you know, interpreting them in terms of JavaScript and building little runtimes that sit on top of JavaScript. But CoffeeScript is a little bit different than that in a way that we'll get into in a minute, in that it tries to embrace JavaScript for its essential nature and become a way of writing JavaScript very, very minimally. So this sort of compile to JS language thing is happening more and more often as JavaScript continues to grow and become increasingly widely used both inside and outside the browser, and is also more interesting because there are some sort of major players that are starting to pick up on this. You have companies like Google, who is not only working on a web browser that targets JavaScript, but also has projects like GWT that they write large applications in, and Tracer, which they're using to bring parts of JavaScript of the future, the JavaScript we might have in 2 or 3 years, and compile them into today's version of JavaScript, as well as projects like Dart, where you have initiatives to take a new language and both make a new VM for it, that may or may not, depending on how politics work out, one day replace JavaScript in the browser, but that can also compile into JavaScript and run everywhere today. And so all of these things are especially interesting in the context of the current progress around working on the next version of JavaScript. You know, I think I like to say that the only thing that's a constant about JavaScript is that it never ever changes, right? We've been stuck with basically the exact same language, you know, for the past 10 years. Basically since the first days of really taking JavaScript on the web seriously, and we still have to deal with IE6 and IE7 interpreters of JavaScript that have literally not changed in 10 years. But the fact is that good work is being done both inside and outside of the TC39 committee in terms of advancing the state of the art in what is going to become the next version of JavaScript eventually, whenever browsers start getting picked up faster and faster, and there's lots of exciting proposals and interesting features that will, you know, be in future versions. And the way to start playing around with some of this stuff today is to look at the wiki, to play around with languages that compile into JavaScript and test out some of these features and maybe even shape the direction of some of these features, because this is all very much a work in progress. Discussion about what happens is an open mailing list that you can participate in. And so it's fairly transparent as to what is going on. So with that, let's get to the core principle of CoffeeScript, which is that it is just JavaScript. And by that, I mean that it tries to embrace the famous good parts of JS, that thin book, as opposed to the fat book, which is the rest of JavaScript, and provide a minimal syntax for expressing those good parts. So what that means is you think about a function and all the pieces that go into a function, right? A function has arguments, a function has a body, it has a return value, And what can you do to write that idea in a minimal way and be very clear about what you're saying? And if you'll bear with me for a moment, I'm going to switch this to turn off mirroring and pop it back in. There we go. So some people usually who haven't really taken a look at what CoffeeScript is, except for a cursory glance, think that this is a way for people to avoid learning JavaScript or to you know, pretend like it's Ruby or it's like Python or another language, which isn't really the point. So the point here is to be as JavaScript-y as possible. And this comes from someone, you know, if you spend all day writing large JavaScript web applications and you're spending all of your time dealing with, you know, browser quirks and missing standard library functions that you have to work around, you know, for even simple things. Like, I'm sure you all remember that, you know, even fairly recent versions of IDE still don't have an index of method on arrays. So you can't find out if an element is in an array without looping over every value. So little missing features. So CoffeeScript tries to smooth over those missing gaps and add new sort of features to make it easy to do those things that might not be included in the standard library. So it's thinking, you know, if you're working in a large JavaScript application, what if you didn't have to worry about semicolons or trailing commas? What if you didn't have to wrangle with the prototype chain and all the ways you can sort of subtly break your prototypes if you try to put them together manually? What would be the minimalist syntax for defining a function or a class, or for defining a function where this, the value of this doesn't change out from underneath your feet when you get passed into a callback? So of course, CoffeeScript isn't just JavaScript syntactically. It is a new syntax, but semantically it is very much alike or the same, with a few minor tweaks that that we'll cover. So I think this is desirable because JavaScript is already, you know, a beautiful language with a gorgeous object model and a flexible programming paradigm where you have, you know, highly dynamic structure. You can pass any number of arguments into any function. You have flexible object literals. And prototypes that you can use to build your own sort of object-oriented programming. And so we want to embrace those constraints of JavaScript and embrace also the limitations of compiling into JavaScript, which means that in the resulting code, you're not going to have an interpreter or a VM executing your functions without adding a whole bunch of special functions to, you know, a global object that the interpreter is going to use. It's basically just translating into, hopefully, the JavaScript you would have written in the first place. So talking a little bit about the compiler underneath the hood, the original version of CoffeeScript, it's getting close to 2 years old now. It was launched on Christmas Day in 2009. And the original version was written in Ruby, and it used a handwritten Ruby lexer and a rack parser to generate the JavaScript. But as of 0.5, it got to the point where the language was complete enough in terms of what you could say that an effort was made to rewrite it in CoffeeScript itself. So right now you actually have a CoffeeScript compiler that's entirely written in CoffeeScript. And so the first time you do that, you know, at that moment where you're tagging 0.5, you have your Ruby compiler and you have your CoffeeScript compiler, and you feed the CoffeeScript version into the Ruby one, and that makes a JavaScript program that you can then feed the source CoffeeScript into the JavaScript that the Ruby generated. And now you have a new compiler that was CoffeeScript generated by, this is making a little bit of sense, but the point is that at a certain point, you feed the compiler into itself two or three times, you get a relatively good self-assurance that things are still working properly, which usually isn't the case the first couple times you try this, and then you can delete the Ruby version and basically you're up to being self-hosting, and you can throw away the original. So the danger of that, of course, is that now you are trying to hack on a new feature in your compiler and you make a mistake. What happens, right? Now you've just broken your compiler and you have no way of fixing it because your source code is in the language that you're trying to build. This is if you're using it to build the same version, but which is generally what we try to do. So the general pattern of working is to make a change, make sure the compiler recompiles itself correctly, and make sure the tests all pass, and then you're probably pretty good to go. So this is some code that, can you guys see that okay? It's a little bit faint. This is some code that the CoffeeScript compiler produced. In a perfect world, it would compile to JavaScript that you would have written in the first place, relatively straightforward stuff. And one common attitude is that, you know, code like this isn't particularly hard to write in JavaScript, and it's true, it's not particularly hard. And lots of folks trick out their text editors with shortcuts for filling out functions and you know, drafting out a prototype structure for you. and using all the library stuff. But at the same time, it's nice not to have to sweat the details and let the compiler be the compiler and just have you say what you mean if you're trying to add a prototypal method to a class, essentially. So CoffeeScript language features are sort of come about by trying to make these common patterns in JavaScript, right? Everyone writes the same kind of loops for copying, for merging two objects. Everyone writes the same kinds of loops for building up prototypes that aren't broken. You know, everyone has all the same library functions that need to be included inside of every JavaScript project that they do. And so if these things become language features, you sort of have a nicer ground level to work with. So what kind of language features are we talking about here? There's sort of three parts to this, right? There's syntax, semantics, and then extra bonus goodies. So syntax being a minimalist syntax for things that already exist. What is the syntax for an array, for an object literal, for a function body, for a class literal? Cleaned up semantics in a few cases where we can do things like have everything be an expression in CoffeeScript, where you have a mixture of statements and expressions in JavaScript. And then extra goodies like comprehensions, where you can simplify the idea of the different JavaScript's various different kinds of looping constructs with flow control statements and functional versions of those like for each and map and reduce and filter and select and use comprehensions to sort of unify those ideas and also compile to more efficient JavaScript. So with that, let's bust out of the slides here and go back to mirroring and bring up some code. And I think that we can make the screen a little bit bigger. Let's do that. There we go. Is that legible? Yep, great. So here you have, so this is just TextMate opened up. Here you have your regular JavaScript function. So as a thought experiment, what would be a minimal syntax for getting this idea across, right? So in CoffeeScript, we'll start by getting rid of the semicolons because who needs those, right? You're ending the line, that's the end of the line. Now we can get rid of var because saying that square equals a function is saying that you want a variable to be assigned to that function. We can get rid of the curlies because we're going to use significant white space to indicate the beginning and end of the block of code, right? So everything indented underneath the function is going to be the body of the function. We can get rid of the return because the value of a function when you call it is basically if you treat it as an expression and you say what is the value of this block of code, well the last thing that the code does is its return value unless you want to return earlier. So x times x is the result. And finally we can get rid of this function word and use an arrow instead. So the idea with the arrow is that the input points to the output, right? The input points to the value, which is the body of code, which is the expression. So square is a function that takes in x, and it returns x times x. And when we compile this, we get back basically the exact same JavaScript you would expect. So that's sort of the basic idea. And then, you know, do this kind of process for the rest of the language. So, you know, object literals are already wonderful in JavaScript, and there's no need to mess with them too much. So you have an array. Here we have three stooges. Here we have a few elements with their periodic numbers. And we can log elements.silicon, and the value of elements.silicon is 14. And the only sort of extra goodies here is that, you know, if you ever had to worry about trailing commas in IE, you don't have to worry about that anymore because commas, you know, objects are also white space significant, so I can just do this, and this compiles to the same object with the commas inserted at the correct place with indentation. So you've seen a little bit of significant white space in the functions and in the object literals. The same follows through for if-else statements, and basically every kind of block statement in CoffeeScript uses significant white space to delimit itself. So if today is Friday, then it is full frontal, and today is indeed Friday. So there you have it. And this is your basic JavaScript if-else. Quick comprehensions, which take the place of loops. So you can do a comprehension over an array of values, an object of keys and values, or a range of numbers if you need sort of manual control over how far your comprehension is going. So what I'm going to show you here is that this is your basic for loop, right? For every stooge in the list, let's log hi and the stooge's name. So if we highlight this and run this, we'll get hi Curly, hi Larry, and hi Mo. And if you want to see what this compiles into, you can see that it's your basic sort of efficient for loop over an array where you cache the length of the list and then you iterate in. So it's not a for each, and you're not going to get the overhead of doing a function call for every loop iteration, even though you get the same kind of terseness of being able to write it out like that. If you want to iterate over all the keys and values of an object, so because JavaScript doesn't support a common iteration protocol for looping over both arrays and objects, we actually have to have a different keyword, which is less than ideal. But for key comma value of object gives you all the keys and values in an object, or you can do for own key comma value of object, which will give you just the own properties. If you ever had to deal with copying objects that looks up the prototype chain or just copying the own properties, you can get that. So this is all running in the Coffee compiler, which is running in Node.js. And if you know Node, process is one of the big global objects in Node. So we're looking here at all of the keys in process. And if we run this, these are sort of all of these top-level keys that exist on the process object. And of course, for ranges. So from 0 to 10, console log I, and we'll get our expected 0 to 10, and we'll get our expected efficient little loop. So those are basic comprehensions. And let's see how they can be used as values. So the basic idea here in CoffeeScript that we'll get to on the next slide as well is that everything's an expression. Trying to get rid of as many statements as possible. So any piece of the language can be used in, you know, conjunction with any other piece. You can return any expression as a value from a function. You can assign it to a variable. You can pass it in as an argument. So let's try this instead. So let's for stooge in list, hi stooge, and let's assign this to hello stooges equals the value of that loop. And then we can log hello stooges, and when we run this, we will see what you'd expect. So now we have the result of assigning that loop to a variable is the value of each step through the loop. Hi Curly, hi Larry, and hi Mo. And we can even do fancier things like filter. So say that we're not a fan of Mo. So for stooge in list when stooge isn't Mo. Getting a little bit long there for the line. And we do this exact same bit, and now we're going to skip over Mo and just get hi Curly and hi Larry as the value of that loop. And if you want to see what this compiles into, we can do that as well. So we're going to get the fancier results where basically hello stooges is being signed to an expression, so it's getting function wrapped, so it can be treated as a single expression. And then the results are getting pushed onto the internal array. And I hope that's visible for folks. All right, so this is true for other kinds of things that would be statements in JavaScript as well, like conditionals, right? If you want to return the value of a conditional, you have to use a ternary. Sometimes they get really long and nested, but here you can just take something like this, where if true, console log 100, else 200, and we get back 100, of course, and your basic if else, but if we assign this to a value, if true, or if we actually, let's console.log it. Let's do console, pass it into a function. Console.log if true 100 else 200. And we can see that we get that ternary back out for us as an expression. And we can do this even for crazy things like a try-catch. I can't imagine many situations where you'd want to pass a try-catch block directly into a function or assign it directly to a value. But hey, if you did, you should be able to. So here we've got a try-catch where we try to call object on a missing value and catch the error, and then this is actually using a little bit of string interpolation, but then print out the error is, and when we run this, we can see that it does indeed work, and the error is reference error, missing is not defined, up at the top there. So everything is an expression, which is sort of one of the main semantic tweaks that CoffeeScript is making. Splats are a way of dealing with the arguments object in a convenient fashion. So often you have to, you know, look into the arguments object, figure out how long it is. It's not a real array, so you can't actually treat it like one. So splats is a way to say this function takes one argument is expecting, and then the rest of them will be collected into a real array that you actually have concat and push and pop and everything else on. So our best actor is the winner. And then the rest of the arguments are going to be the runners-up, and we can see that Jippo Nolan has won the Oscar with three runners-up. The existential operator in CoffeeScript. So in JavaScript, testing the truthiness of a value, if you want to use it in an if statement, for example, if value gets a little bit tricky because things like empty strings and the number zero are falsy. So the existential operator, which is the question mark, is a way to ask if the value exists. So basically, is the value not either null or undefined? If it exists, then you can use it. So solipsism is true if mind and not world. These, of course, do not exist here, so solipsism is not true. But you can also use the existential operator to soak up property accesses. So here we've got Sue, and Sue has a name, which is Sue Jones, and she's 27 years old. And we can console.log sue.name.length and get back out 9, which is the number of letters in Sue's name. But if we tried to access into a non-existent property on Sue instead, we know that Sue.non-existent property does not exist. And we would get that we cannot read property existent of undefined, of course, because there is no such property here. But we can also soak this up. So in CoffeeScript, if you insert the existential operator in a property access, it will soak up the rest of the accesses beyond that point. I need to soak up all of them. Sorry, Sue.non-existent property, because Sue exists. There we go. So Sue exists, but non doesn't. So basically, this is a way of saying, soak up the rest of the accesses belong this. If non doesn't exist, don't worry about it. So it's helpful when you're indexing into large JSON API responses. You've just made a web request and you've got a big nested JSON object and you don't know whether or not necessarily the thing you're looking for is in there. You can use the existential operator to make sure that it does indeed exist or not. And you can use this with function calls as well. So reverse is a function that doesn't exist on strings. If you try to call it on a string, it will say that Sue Jones, the string, has no method reverse. So we can soak it up with an existential operator and only call the function if it exists, which it doesn't in this case. Literals in CoffeeScript often come in block forms as well as their simple forms. So a string, which can be a single quoted or a double quoted string, can also be used with sort of triple quotes at the top and the bottom, and you can get kind of a HereDoc style where you have indentation sensitive. People love to use this for little bits of HTML and templates or for longer blocks of declarative stuff like SQL. If you're writing a Node.js app and you're doing some SQL queries, it's very handy to be able to have nice multi-line strings for that. And because strings in CoffeeScript support interpolation, you can also interpolate. So if we have our haiku here, an old pond, a frog jumps in, the sound of water, we can also put in variable, animal equals frog, and then interpolate in the animal here, and see that this will still, and then console.log the haiku, and we can see that this will produce the expected result of the interpolated frog. And what this compiles into is your expected nice long string concatenation with the new lines inserted and the animal jumped in. And this same block form works both for strings as well as comments. So a single comment is just a hash mark, the one character till the rest of the line, and a block comment is 3 hashes. And also regexes, which is actually the useful one. So you can break up a regex. You can either have a regex on a single line, you know, but often you're doing a big long regex, maybe something like trying to check an email address or a URL and it's getting really crazy and you're trying to make it correct. So this one's actually from one version of the CoffeeScript Lexer, where regex that starts with 3 slashes, basically its body, you can use white space and it won't mean anything. So white space within the body is ignored and you can use comments inside of a regex. So here we have all the different pieces of this regex. Each kind of thing it's trying to match broken out on a separate line. So this is it's one capturing group, you can see with the parentheses, and a whole bunch of alternatives with the pipes. And when we compile this back down to JavaScript, this big block regex, we get back the thing that we would have had to write otherwise, this really nasty long one. Now this one is a bit controversial, and feel free to interject. That's probably something that I should have mentioned, is that if you'd like to, we can maybe save some time for questions at the end, but if you think you have something important to heckle with, feel free to heckle, because it works better as a conversation. So classes in JavaScript are, of course, a much contentious thing. Most libraries that build, maybe not most. It used to be the case that lots of large-scale JavaScript libraries would include some kind of class mechanism, mostly because the existing prototype chain in JavaScript is very difficult
and very error prone to set up correctly. And you can do it by hand, but you want to have a library function that does it for you. If you want to have a constructor function with a prototype property that makes new instances, and you want to have it with a prototype chain looking upwards to a parent constructor function with a prototype property that's inheriting properties from, it's not so easy to get that set up. So CoffeeScript basically calls arrows and gives you a class literal. So this class beast is going to be a constructor function with the name of beast and a prototypal property with the value of speak. And so basically, what you can see right here, right? So we're saying beast is a class, and it has keys and values, right? And the keys are prototypal properties, and the values are the values of those prototypal properties. So in this case, the value is a function, which means that it's basically a method on your class. So speak is a function that logs roar. And so at the bottom here, we're going to say new beast.speak, and it's going to roar. We have, if you guys were at AsyncJS last night, there was a great jungle presentation on the screen where we had birds flocking around and a lion singing in the corner and a spaceship that would come down and abduct different animals, all written in Canvas and SVG and JavaScript, basically. I think the Royal Pavilion was in there as a mechanical spider as well. So here we've got a Boyd that extends a beast. So Boyd is a function. It's a constructor function with a prototype property that points to beast.prototype, right? It points to an instance of beast. And it's got a function that logs tweet. So it's overriding that speak function. So now if we do a Boyd instead of a beast, it will override speak and we'll get tweet. And now here's where it actually pays off, because you can do this all with basic JavaScript. But one thing that's very difficult in JS is to be able to call super. If you want to call super, you have to know the name of the parent class that you're inheriting from and look up its method on its prototype and then sort of invoke it on the current instance. So CoffeeScript, because we can see at compile time that we're inside of a lion and a lion is extending a beast and we're inside of a method and the method is named speak, we can turn that super call into basically looking at beast's speak method and using it. So now if we do a lion, we will get roar and the jungle sleeps tonight, calling super from the beast and then finishing itself. So those are basic class literals, and there's one interesting aspect of them, which is that the body of the class is actually just executable code. So you can put if statements in there and stuff, which we will get into in a bit, time willing. Bound functions. So in JavaScript, you have this thing where everything is lexically scoped and very, very convenient, except for the this keyword, which is probably the number one source of frustration, I think. If you had to pick a single thing, I think you'd pick dynamic this. So usually, if you look at the name of a variable, you can tell what the value of it is because it's going to be the closest place that it was assigned to within the code, right? So name here is going to be the value of that name argument because that's the closest version of name. If there's one higher, it will be ignored. But this isn't always what you'd expect it to be. This can change depending on how you call the function. If you take the function off of one object and stick it onto another one and then call it, this will be that other object and not the place where it started out. So CoffeeScript gives you a bound function literal that you can use to say, keep the value of this the same as it is right now and don't let it change. Kind of like function.bind from both ECMAScript 5 and a prototype JS. So here we've got a person class. Its constructor function takes a name and sets the name of the person, and it's got an introduce function that logs hello or hi, I'm name. We make a new person, Groucho Marx, and we ask him to introduce himself, and he says, hi, I'm Groucho Marx. But if we were to take this introduce function off, if we were to say Groucho is a new person, say hello is Groucho.introduce, and then say hello, Groucho, and he's going to say, hi, I'm undefined, which isn't the right thing here, but it's because he's forgotten what this is. And so this.name is no longer Groucho Marx, it's now undefined. So basically, if you use, and this is a problem because the this, I'm sorry, I should have put this in here, at is shortcut for this. So hi, I'm this.name is what I was saying inside of that function. So if we don't want the value of this to change, we can use a fat arrow instead of a skinny one. And now this is bound to the value when the class is created, and he will continue to say, hi, I'm Groucho Marx, even though you've pulled off the function and stuck it in a variable. So this is very handy for things with callbacks, like jQuery callbacks, right? You make an AJAX call, you want to keep your this the same on the other end, you can just use a bound function and do it that way. All right.
pattern matching. So one great proposal from the next version of JavaScript is this thing called destructuring assignment, where usually you assign a variable on the left-hand side to a value on the right-hand side. But what if you assign something that looked like a value on the left-hand side to something that looked like a variable on the right-hand side? And the basic idea is that it will destructure, it will take the same shape of the value that you have on the left-hand side and pull out all of those properties you're mentioning as individual variables. So here we've got a CoffeeScript style object literal with indentation. So we've got futurists is an object. It's got a sculptor, a painter, and a poet. The sculptor and the painter are strings, and the poet is another object. And the poet's name is F.T. Marinetti, and his address is an array. And the first thing in the array is Via Roma, and the second thing is Bellagio. So a nested object here. And now we're going to take that same structure and assign it to the value. So futurists is the object. So we're looking into futurists here. We're pulling out the poet. We're looking into the poet, we're pulling out the name as a name variable, we're looking into the address, and we're pulling out street as the first line in the address and city as the second line. And then we're going to log name lives on street. And when you run this code, you will see that you get FT Marinetti lives on Via Roma 42R. So this is another handy feature for dealing with things that return, instead of returning a simple value, return an object and looking into an object to pull out values. Good for API calls. Good for importing modules inside of Node.js and stuff of that nature. So it wouldn't be a good talk mentioning Node.js without doing a simple Hello World web server. So this is showing you that you can both run in the browser. You can also script your Node's apps with CoffeeScript pretty easily. So this is just requiring the HTTP module from Node, creating a server, listening on port 3000 and saying hello full frontal. And if we run this in TextMate, because why the hell not? We can switch to a browser, go to localhost 3000, and see hello full frontal. Our web server's up and running. All right, close off that server. And I think I'm going to hold off on the design decisions until a little bit later. But one thing that I want to make sure to cover is that part of the idea with CoffeeScript is to make this a transparent process. So all of the source code is annotated so that if you do want to hack on a version of a 2 JavaScript compiler yourself, we try to make it fairly easy. This is, so in terms of other 2 JavaScript languages, this is that long list that I showed that cutoff slide of earlier, but there are a vast, vast number of interesting projects that are trying to bring both new ideas and new language flavors to JS. Many of these are under the headings of existing languages like Scala and C-sharp and Lisp and Scheme and OCaml and Haskell and Smalltalk and C++. But some of them are also more JavaScript specific, like things that take JavaScript in different interesting directions. So what I was saying is that the CoffeeScript, this is a version of the CoffeeScript source code that's linked to off of the website. In this case, we're looking at the grammar. And it's all annotated so that hopefully you can get an idea that of how to dive in and play around with working on a language yourself, because it's very much not rocket science, and you shouldn't be afraid to get your feet wet and mess around with it a little bit. So here we're looking at the rules for what constitutes a body of code, right? It can either be a single line of code or basically this left recursive thing where you have a body and then another line, or a body and then another line, and you keep adding lines to your body. A line can be either an expression or a statement. So I said that CoffeeScript tries to just have expressions, and that's almost true, not quite, because you still have things like throw and return and break and continue that can't be turned into expressions very easily. Right there, actually, you can see that that's the case. A statement is just what I said. An expression can be a value, an invocation, all these different grammar pieces. And so this then becomes the grammar that the language uses. And we also try to make it even a bit more transparent than that. I'm going to change this color scheme so we can see it. Well, I think I have to make a new window then. Change. That's not right. Make it default. There we go. Make a new one. That's it. So if we go into full frontal here, I have a source file that I can show you with our basic function that we looked at before. Square is a function, takes an x, returns x times x. So CoffeeScript tries to expose this whole process to you a bit. If we say coffee, this is the command that you would use to compile a file, dash p, we're going to print out that same file. We'll get the JavaScript that we've seen before. Let's clear that out of the way. And if I don't do print, this would be dash dash print, but I do instead dash dash tokens, these are the tokens that you'd get by lexing that CoffeeScript stream. So you can sort of look into the different stages that are involved here. Here we have an identifier square is assigned to a function. So it starts the parameter list. There's an identifier x in there, ends the parameter list. That arrow symbol being the function symbol. You can see how the indentation is actually being lexed as a token. And so you have the meaningful indentation getting put in here. And then inside of that indentation, right, you've got an identifier, an operator, and another identifier. And then the indentation closes, and then that line ends. So that's the token step. And the tokens are then parsed into a parse tree. And you can expose that as well. So if you do coffee dash dash nodes instead of dash dash tokens, we'll get back out our nice little parse tree, where we can see we have a block of code where the value square is assigned to a code body that has one parameter and its own block of code, which is an operation that multiplies two x's. So that's kind of the different stages in the pipeline. And these things are also exposed in JavaScript. So some people have been doing fun projects where they, from a Node.js app, will require the CoffeeScript compiler as a module. Pass in their source code, get back the AST, get back this tree of nodes, and then manipulate it to add extra goodies that they want. So for example, someone on the Google Clojure compiler team has done sort of a version of this that then produces JavaScript code that's annotated with all of the Google Clojure compiler comments to make it easier, compile using advanced optimizations in the Clojure compiler. So I'm going to pop back into slides here. Let's turn off mirroring. And find the mouse. There we go. So what we're really talking about here is build your own JavaScript. And I think that this is important for lots of folks to get involved in, because JavaScript is not a language that's designed by a single executive director. It's a language that all browsers contribute to, that's developed as an open standard, and that as a JavaScript community, we should be giving feedback to in terms of directions we'd like to see it rolling. And one of the best ways to play around with the future of languages on the web is to play around with your own ideas and work them into a compiler. And many of the things that we take for granted in current day JavaScript, like function prototype.bind, was pioneered by prototype.js. And things like object.create exist because of sort of long-standing patterns of how people have been doing sort of new instances in JavaScript. Things like use strict evolve because of community guidelines and standards. And it's very much not rocket science. You've seen kind of how the compiler is exposed. It's not very long. I think it's about 2,500 lines of CoffeeScript, the entire bit end to end, from the lexing, the parsing, the printing out of all the JavaScript pieces. And from a purely selfish perspective, if you target JavaScript as your target language, if you want to play around with your own kind of thing, sort of voila, your code does not only run everywhere, both on the browser in Node.js, you can use it to script Photoshop, you can use it in Rhino, you can script Java apps with it. Basically, because it's JavaScript, it runs everywhere. And also because it's JavaScript and it happens to run on VM or TraceMonkey or a new engine, it's probably one of the fastest dynamic languages in existence. And so you've seen that huge list of all of these kinds of ideas. So CoffeeScript, I think partly because it's taken that funny attitude of embracing the constraints and not trying to be too fancy, and if there's an idea that is a great idea but would result in having to compile too much JavaScript, you have to add special functions to the runtime, if you have to insert method checks all over the place, we're not going to do it. It's become sort of a target ground for all different kinds of programming ideas. People have tried to add static typing, optional typing, point freestyle, macros, fibers, single assignment, yield, annotations, contracts. All these things have been prototyped and proposed. And that kind of stuff can't go into CoffeeScript, often because it would break that constraint of trying to be minimal syntax for JavaScript that already exists. But it is great stuff to explore, and I encourage you to explore it in your own 2.js language. There should be other languages that are doing these ideas of how far would contracts actually help with a real-world web app or a real-world Node.js app. We mentioned the annotated source code. But one other thing I want to emphasize in doing these sort of language experiments and especially in terms of transpiling into JavaScript, is that it's okay to cheat. So, and this is, you know, you're not beholden to the future of the web. It's not going to be shipped with IE 11 and be set in stone for the rest of time, and you're going to be responsible for it. If you need to fudge around the edges, that's okay. So, how we cheat in CoffeeScript is that there's actually a lot of ambiguous syntax in the grammar. All the places where you leave off the curlies and the parens aren't necessarily parsable because there's more than one way that it can go. So we have a rewriting stage where you take the tokens from the lexer and you rewrite them to make them unambiguous before they get handed off to the parser. And so that makes our grammar very, very simple because it can only deal with a very rigid and unambiguous stream of tokens because it's all been rewritten to remove ambiguity ahead of time. And so that's how we're cheating. And there are resources to help you. So these are just some of the grammar parsing projects that exist in JavaScript. We use JSON, but there are other great options if you prefer pegs to get started experimenting with your own grammars. And that brings us mostly to the end. So the point that I've been, or not the end in CoffeeScript, right? You just indent out and you would close. But the point I'm trying to make is that JavaScript is changing a lot. We're in the middle of this renaissance where you have real progress in the browsers and you have Node.js on the server, you have true competition, you have exciting initiatives, you know, leaping beyond what GWT has done and doing things like Dart that are really, and ES.Next and Tracer that are really pushing the boundaries of what JavaScript can become. And we also have this sense that HTML5 is really about taking JavaScript seriously. And at the same time, you know, JavaScript is too important to also just be left up to the committee. And we should be advocating for things that we think are useful as people who use the language every day, all day, late into the night sometimes. And so instead of waiting for a standards body or from Google to give you the language that you'd like to work with on a day-to-day basis, you can sort of have that language today if you want to. And I hope that this talk has given at least a few of you the impetus to do just that. And thanks a lot.